The first bill on the agenda is Senate File 2971. Senator Prettner-Solon, chief author, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bill that I'm bringing before you, 2971, is an OES technical bill, and there's only one section. Is that Section 8? Section 7. That brings it to this committee. And it's because of an exemption that it would make to the alien farm law, and I understand those are highly critical words when you speak them in this committee.
Senator?
Yes.
I think the section you want to be on is on page 7, Section 8, page 7.
Oh, okay. I maybe didn't have an engrossed copy. Section 8, correct. And so the problem that occurs in energy is that when siting new wind turbines, wind energy companies need to acquire easements for repair and maintenance of turbines and transmission lines. And because of this alien farm law, Minnesota is at a competitive disadvantage to our neighbor states for new wind development, and we're fearful that further wind development will occur in the Dakotas or in Iowa or places around the state because they can't have this exemption of an easement. This was brought to me by the Department of Agriculture, and both Quinn Cheney and Doug Spanier, I believe, are here to discuss this with you. And they can explain it much better than I can.
Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And when it's appropriate, I also have an amendment that deals with Section 8. I guess mine deals with Section 9, doesn't it?
Same?
Yeah. So I don't know if they want to talk about the bill in its entirety now or if they want to entertain an amendment.
Senator Prettner-Solon, do you want to do the amendment now or later?
You know, Mr. Chair, I think it's probably better to have the discussion first. It kind of relates to the controversy around the bill.
Let's go ahead with the testimony from Minnesota Department of Agriculture Attorney Doug Spanier.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Doug Spanier. I'm a lawyer at the Department of Agriculture. And the alien farm law, Minnesota Statute 500.221, what it restricts is it doesn't allow foreign individuals to own or have any type of interest in agricultural land, and corporations or any type of business entity that has more than 20% foreign ownership is not allowed to have any type of interest in agricultural land. And so where this comes about is on the wind turbines, it's more of a technical issue because where the turbines sit themselves, it's not agricultural land because the turbines are there. The road going in, it's not agricultural land because it's there. It's the transmission lines because they're normally, as I understand, they're normally buried under, and so they need to have the easement to be able to go in and repair and install and do all that. So that easement, because that's agricultural land, that's a technical violation of the alien farm law. And then they normally need to have an easement for the wind rights. So, and I've checked with other states. I know Iowa said, well, we don't really enforce against it. It's allowed. And so it's really just sort of a minor change. And the other issue with this is that on the enforcement end of this, it's difficult because these are private transactions between companies and producers. I don't become aware of it unless I get a complaint of some sort. I have never gotten one complaint from a producer on a contract coming in. I mean, I get contracts on vegetable contracts, poultry contracts, hog contracts. I've never had a producer come to me on a wind easement contract, show me one, complain to me about one. So it gets difficult to know which ones, and then to track them, if I do find out a company, is that to try to track it back to figure out which ones are maybe foreign-owned, because they usually have a company here in the States, and then there's a subsidiary or a parent company that goes back, and usually maybe there's a parent company, one in Minnesota, and then there's another company that might be over the in you know, in Delaware. And then there's another one that had, might have some interest in another country, a percentage, so it traces back a little bit. How many are here? All right, and I wouldn't be surprised if there are those that are already here. And so this is just trying to help this out.
Senator Prettner-Solin?
Mr. Chair, I might mention that there already are exemptions for utilities and pipelines. And another area where this would impact is we're talking about bringing in hydro from Manitoba, and we need to build the transmission lines for that. And that will require, that would be helpful if we had, if we could, that would be a foreign entity also.
Are there any questions or comments from the committee? If not, the next witness I have on the list here is Quinn Cheney, Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I guess she's not going to testify. Tom Peterson, Director of Government Relations, Minnesota Farmers Union.
Well, maybe I'll ask you a question.
Yeah. Senator Scully.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Prettner-Solin, I'm as I read this on page 8, line 7 and 8, I get the transmission lines, but why the wind rights again?
Mr. Chair, Senator Scoy, the purpose would be so that they can maintain those transmission lines. And and wind rights would be, they need setbacks from the windmills, is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senators, usually what they need that for is to make sure, I think, as I understand it, for requirements on where, once the turbine is set, where farmers can build anything else up, you know, and they say restrict it so that they can't build it to get, you know, avoid getting in the way of the turbine, you know, can't erect some big, huge buildings in the way. So there's some other requirements for that.
And so, Mr. Chair, Mr. Spanier, this really doesn't have anything to do with somebody who would go out and kind of prospectively buy up sites for wind towers or buy the rights to put a wind tower up, even though there isn't a tower there. This doesn't have anything to do with that.
Mr. Chair, Senator.
I can tell you don't understand the question.
No.
Evidently, from people have been going around the state buying up choice or windy sites for wind towers. This has nothing to do with that.
No, Mr. Chair, Senator Scoy, that's a totally different issue. We do have a provision in the bill for that that limits the length of time that those development companies can hold that property to 7 years. We extended it. There was a sunset that would have occurred this year. We extended it for one more year while we continue to work on this issue and come up with some permanent solution.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Kubley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I wonder if Mr. Knopf might explain the difference between, wind rights in this context and where it is now in law and what the purpose of it is. What's the difference, I guess, is what I'm looking for.
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kubley, if you could just clarify what you're looking for. What this does is it's the alien farm law. Currently, these entities wouldn't be able to acquire these easements if they're foreign-owned, or majority foreign-owned, wouldn't be able to acquire these easements. What this is going to do is allow them to acquire easements for transmission lines and wind rights for those properties. And I'm not sure beyond that what you're...
Well, I gathered from what Senator Prettner-Solin had said that there was a difference between the way it's used here and the way that currently have it in statute.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Prettner-Solin was talking about something I don't have a lot of knowledge on because that's in the Energy Committee, but it sounds like they do have limits on how long people can hold these properties before using them. But it does. This would allow somebody to go out and purchase the wind rights on a piece of property, the easement to the wind rights on a piece of property. It would be under, but this is just to avoid the alien farm law. There would be other laws that Minnesota would have in place for its residents and for aliens and for non-residents. that would apply in those situations. This is just for the corporate farm law or the alien farm law.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Does the committee have any further questions or comments? I will call, if not, I'll call on Tom Peterson, Minnesota Farmers Union.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. And, you know, at First Farmers Union, my name's Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union. And we're always really concerned about protecting the corporate farm laws. We already talked about once this week.
Sorry.
And, you know, and the whole idea when we passed the renewable electricity standard a few years ago was that we were going to have, you know, move forward with wind investment and have provide opportunities for our farmers. And, you know, the talk was a lot of community development, a lot of farmer involvement, you know, keeping the money here. And so that's what we support, and that's what we want to have happen. And that was our main concern when we started looking at this bill, is how does that impact community development projects our farmers are working on. And it's hard, you know, because you want it here. But what we've looked at is that a lot of times the capital that's needed for these very expensive projects and for the lines, as we were saying, it also says for repair of the lines, for getting the lines to the transmission, for acquiring the wind rights, that a lot of times we look at those projects, they have a foreign-owned component. And as Mr. Spanier said, 20% or more, as we visited with some of our members and projects that they're looking at or want to do, that is unfortunately a reality of the situation. And if we want to move forward, it's something that I think is going to have happen. I really appreciate Senator Solon. We've worked on this issue for many years on the wind easement time frame, so that if we're going to clarify that we're going to have more companies buying wind rights and rights to easements, we're still going to limit them for one more year to 7 years. And hopefully next year over the interim, we can talk to the interested parties and see if 7 years is the right time frame or not. But basically, if we don't pass the sunset, then, you know, this summer, you know, companies are going to be signing easements. Believe me, they're going to want to sign 25, 50 or longer rights, you know, if they can. And it also, by doing limiting it to 7 years, you know, provides some opportunity for rollover and to relook at some of those. So I urge you to support that. I also talked to the department. I appreciate Mr. Spanier's been really good to work with, looking at his reporting and trying to get some kind of handle on who are the companies that are wanting to come in and doing business and what's happening. And I think that's the amendment that Senator Scogin's going to have. And so those are my comments. I urge you to support the bill as we've amended it, and appreciate Senator Solon's work on the bill.
Senator Pretner Solon?
Mr. Chair, I think this is probably the appropriate time for Senator Scogin's language, which would make Mr. Peterson more comfortable.
Senator Scogin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move the A3 amendment.
Senator Scogin moves the A3 amendment, which has been passed out.
Mr. Chair, just a brief description. It's been passed out. I do urge you to read it over. I saw it for the first time at 3:00 this afternoon, so I just might need Mr. Knopf to help. But it's basically, I think it's a guidelines for the initial report and then subsequent reports of these groups or individuals that own interest in this ag land. I think it's kind of a reporting mechanism.
Mr. Knopf, do you have anything to add to that?
No, Mr. Chairman. A little bit. Basically, yeah, it requires within 30 days of acquisition to report, and then annually thereafter. And they'll have to pay a filing fee of $50 plus $10 for each additional quarter section of land. And the commissioner will also have to make the information available to the public, so the public will know where these foreign entities are have easements on agricultural land for wind rights.
Does the committee have any further questions or comments? I would prefer to just, before we vote on this, I'd like to get any further testimony. I do have one lady, Lisa Crum, an attorney with Lindquist and Benham, on the list here. Does she want to come forward and testify?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I have a prepared statement that I'd like to provide to you today. My name is Lisa Crum, and I'm an attorney with Lindquist & Venom in Minneapolis, and I work with wind energy developers. I'm here today to testify in favor of this amendment. However, I have to caveat that to say I also received that new proposed language just about a half an hour ago. So my testimony is focused primarily on the original language. In my practice, I have occasion to interact with a number of wind energy development companies, both large and small, in the state and outside the state, that have expressed interest in developing wind energy projects in the state of Minnesota. However, after learning about the Minnesota Alien Ownership Law, these companies decide to do business elsewhere in the surrounding states, if possible, because of the uncertainty about how the Alien Ownership Law may impact their wind energy projects. These companies want to make investments in Minnesota, and they are U.S. entities with substantial U.S. operations, and importantly, these companies are U.S. taxpayers. Many of them have hundreds or thousands of U.S. employees in their turbine manufacturing facilities, wind energy development businesses, and operation and maintenance services. As the law currently stands, the Alien Ownership Law prohibits these U.S. entities from holding an interest in agricultural land in Minnesota if at least 80% of the ultimate beneficial ownership of that company is not held by U.S. citizens. That goes all the way up to the chain. These U.S. entities do not farm Minnesota's agricultural land, and they have no intent of doing so. They simply want to pay Minnesota farmers for wind rights. These companies want to bring their investment dollars to Minnesota, and this means more construction jobs and related services, more tax revenue for the state, and more dollars in the hands of Minnesota farmers who grant wind easements for projects that get built. These companies have substantial experience in wind energy development, significant financial wherewithal, and are well positioned to help alleviate the transmission gridlock that is slowing down so many Minnesota wind energy projects. Just a little bit of information on wind development in Minnesota. In 2008, Minnesota ranked fourth in the nation for wind installations. Recent reports, and I take this from AWEA, which is the American Wind Energy Association, shows that Minnesota slipped to number 5 in 2009, behind Texas, Iowa, California, and Washington. Minnesota added only 56 megawatts of wind capacity in 2009, lagging far behind 23 other states. Minnesota's aggressive REO goal of 25% renewable energy by 2025 is achievable, and these companies can help make it a reality. Accordingly, I urge you to support this amendment. This change in law is good for the entire wind industry of Minnesota. It's good for Minnesota jobs and good for Minnesota farmers. I'd like to just add to that the amendment that was recently presented. And although I haven't had time to thoroughly analyze it, I have a few concerns about the market value, the part that talks about market value and how you assess market value of an easement, and also about how this would affect that ultimate beneficial ownership and how the state would potentially monitor that. It's unclear. And that's all I have, unless you have any questions.
Are there any questions or comments, Senator Kubley?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Crum. You know, as Mr. Peterson stated, you know, we'd like to have, you know, a number of people who live in our state and who live in a local area have a good percentage of the ownership of wind. In your reading or in your proposal, would this make that more or less possible for those individuals?
I think there's probably a couple levels to look at and to answering that question. There are a number of smaller, maybe small to medium wind project developments that are going forward and have gone forward. And by that, I mean you know, maybe less than 25 megawatts. What I'm seeing is that those projects are quite often community-owned, or that the community has an option to buy into those projects and share in some type of royalty payments and things like that. But what we're seeing as far as the larger developments, these projects require millions and millions and the hundreds of millions of dollars to build and to get them started up. And so if you're looking at a 200 to 300 megawatt wind project, for a community to come up with the capital to allow that project to go forward would be difficult.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Kubley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe for either you or Senator Bretner Solon, would this change then also require a change in our current seabed law?
I haven't analyzed that question, but off the top of my head, I don't
maybe
think so.
Maybe Senator Bretner Solon would know.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kubley, no. I mean, there's legislation that governs seabed, and that would remain the same. This would be those larger wind projects that are brought in, and they don't fall under our seabed legislation.
Are there any further questions or comments? Well, then I'll ask if there's anybody in the audience that wants to speak on this bill or this amendment. Seeing none, and seeing no further discussion or questions from the committee, Senator Scogin renews his motion to adopt the A3 amendment. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those say nay. The motion is adopted, or the amendment is adopted, and now we've got the entire bill before us. Is there any? Yes, Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Bretner Solon, I'm going to support your bill, but I do want to make a comment. When Minnesota passed its renewable energy mandate, we were going to increase rates for our ratepayers and have economic activity within the state. And we don't have any manufacturing, and we don't make the blades or the turbines, and now the ownership of the wind farm is going to go to somebody outside the state. And I mean, I know that there's good things from renewable energies, but it's distressing to me that we haven't been able to figure out a way to have more of this economic activity directly benefit the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Chair? To Senator Scogin's comments, I think you'll be very pleased with our new seabed legislation then that allows production of the generators and the turbines and everything in Minnesota and to be used toward the 51%. As long as they use merchandise that's purchased in Minnesota, and it should generate new enthusiasm for developing those plants and those manufacturers here in Minnesota.
Thank you, Senator.
Any further comments or discussion, questions? If not, we'll proceed to vote. Has anybody moved the bill yet, Senators? Okay, Senator Langseth moves Senate File 2971 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the floor. And in discussing what we're really going to want to do here, I'll take a vote on this motion, but we want to hang on to, or we'll be keeping track of Sections 8 and 9 for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill here. But we'll pass the entire bill to the floor, and then we'll maybe consider Sections 8 and 9 to be added to an omnibus bill later in the session. Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, same sign. Motion's carried.
And thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
The next bill up is Senate File 3274, Senator Vickerman.
How big a deal could that be?
Mr. Chair, Senate File 3274 is a veterans lottery game. Trying to figure out some way to raise some funds to take care of our troops, and it's been difficult, but I think we found a way. If we can get your support, that we can do it. Minnesota veterans have served our country with great honor. We in turn want to honor their services and their sacrifice by supporting them when they return home. Some veterans are experiencing problems related to post-traumatic stress disorder, which can result in financial difficulties, chemical dependency, family problems, and even homelessness. We can't stand by and do nothing when America's heroes are living in their cars or under bridges. They put their lives on the line, keeping America safe, and we must find a way to help them in their time of need. The budget bill that we passed out of this committee recently does not provide any permanent funding to help homeless veterans. We also heard from Lutheran Social Services that they won't be able to provide counseling services to veterans and their families because the demand for service is so great that they're run out of money. Where will the money come from to help our veterans when we're facing a $1 billion budget deficit? We need to think outside of the box. Find new ways to raise the resources required to meet veterans' needs. Senate File 3274 provides a fun way for Minnesotans to help veterans by creating a veteran-themed state lottery scratch-off ticket. This is how it works. The state lottery would develop a veteran scratch-off lottery ticket, and the general fund revenue from this special game would be dedicated for veterans' benefits. We know of at least four other states that have already have a veterans lottery game. We checked on them. They're Iowa, Illinois, Kansas, and Texas. Kansas' sale of a veterans lottery game raised $1.6 million for veterans' benefits. Iowa estimates sales revenue between $2 and $3 million. Illinois has raised more than $7 million since 2006. And Texas just launched their game on Veterans Day 2009. The Minnesota Lottery estimates that a veterans game would create a minimum between $800,000 and $1 million for this program. My bill recommends dividing the funding between programs that serve helplessness veterans and the programs that provide mental health counseling to veterans. In your folder, you will find more detailed information about the veterans lottery game in other states. And I'd also like to draw your attention to the color copy of one of the Kansas games, which used a veterans branch of service as a game theme. Other patriotic themes have included the Statue of Liberty, Liberty Bell, Uncle Sam, and Stars and Stripes. Please support Senate File 3274 and give Minnesotans a chance to have some fun while they show their support. Members, if you look in your packet, you should have a copy. How catching it is, I first put this together, and the first person I run across was Senator Murphy, and he says, I can tell you right now, as long as you've got that bulldog in there, I'm okay. It'll work. And it's just something that we can possibly do, and I have some help here, Kathleen Vitalis. Maybe you would help a little bit. This morning, we spent 3 hours trying to figure out the support our license plates. And we kind of finally figured that out, I think. And now we're trying to, that just shows you the need of, the great need, what we have to have. We just don't have enough. So maybe you could shed a little light on it, would you please?
Sure. Thank you, Senator. For the record, Kathleen Vitalis, I'm Executive Director of Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans. And also for the record, this is my second time today testifying, and once is enough, believe me. But this is a nice, friendly room. So thank you very much for having me today. What I'd like to do We testified last year, and Minnesota, I'll give you a brief update of where we're at and where we're at with services, but I do have a couple of our veterans here to say a few words that are in our program and how MACV has helped them. A reminder, and I gave you a folder of information that you could look at to see the variety of programs. The key is we're statewide, and we're unique that way in the nation to provide these gaps in services statewide. We do that through three offices in Duluth, in Mankato, and in the metro area. We are a 501c3 nonprofit. We've been around for 18 years. Our results show the effectiveness and efficiencies with which we operate. And one thing about being the nonprofit is that we are able to leverage federal funding. And this year, I've gotten $800,000 of different federal grants into Minnesota to help our veterans. And I think that's a really good case for the leveraging. Last year, we supported and assisted 840 veterans and their families in 62 different counties. We are truly statewide. Another example of our monetary justification is that we have one particular federal program. The state does not fund this at all. It's a federal employment program in the metro area. 148 formerly homeless veterans employed, housed, and stable in 1 year, representing gross wages of $3.5 million in this state. That's the leverage of the federal dollars. The other thing that I wanted to bring up is that this is a coordinated effort. We have many partners and collaborators. We provide direct assistance, again, to fill the gaps. I'm very often asked, well, there's a lot of programs out there. How do you work with all of the other programs? My staff, that's their job. They know that if the State Soldiers Assistance Program with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is the answer, we work very closely with the county veterans service officers in all the counties. We do not duplicate services, but sometimes people simply aren't eligible for certain things, and there are those gaps, and that's where MACV comes in. 2009 statistics wrap up, and then I want to I'll give you something else that was rather startling when I looked at it this morning. We had close to, I have 12 full-time staff. We had 12,000 contacts, assisted again over 840 veterans and their families directly. Trends, female veterans rising in what we serve, it's 9 to 10% now and going up. Veterans with a disability, 76% of who we serve have a disability. And the number of OIF, OEF veterans that we serve, 19% and rising. I looked at the clients on our client list that the last 17 clients that we signed up for services, statewide, different regions, of those 17, 10 were OIF, OEF veterans, and 6 were female. It is, those trends are definitely rising. So we're statewide. We don't duplicate services. We leverage other sources of funding. But when I heard about this idea, the hard thing for our organization always is the need outweighs the funding that is available. No matter where I go, I tap all the federal sources available, everything we can possibly get, but the need still outweighs what we are able to fund. And I looked at this as such a wonderful opportunity to bring some consistent funding into this state on an ongoing basis that we can count on. One-time funding is great, but when that goes away, the need doesn't go away. So I fully support this. Our organization does. I'm excited by it. And would be here to answer any questions, or if you'd like our veterans to say a few words, Senator.
I want them two veterans to come up, but before they do that, remember that members that every day there's more troops coming back and keep coming back. We're going to get into the thousands pretty quick when this war or this skirmish that we're in right now.
Yes, sir.
And so the need is still going to be very, very great. So if I could have Mr. Thames is here.
Yeah.
And Elmer Duncan, they're both veterans, and they could add a little bit to it. The committee, state your name for the record.
I'm Elmer Heller Duncan. I'm a Minnesota Army National Guard veteran of 98 to 08.
And I'm Robert Thames, United States Navy, 71 to 75.
Welcome to the committee. Go ahead and make your statement.
The last of the senior members of McAfee. I just completed the program back here January the 15th. Since my tenure there, I was there about two years and about 4 months. And during that course of my tenure, McAfee pretty much saved my life, personally. I believe they gave me the tools to deal with my addiction of alcoholism. I didn't have that resource back when I got out in 75. And to me right now, I can currently say it's really a godsend. Because if we had it in 75, I'm quite sure a lot of us vets probably wouldn't be going through the crisis of homelessness or drug addiction or whatever that crutch that tends to bear us all the time. And since I've been through the program, I've seen the need for what I would consider more funding from hopefully from you all to aid veterans and helping them get the stability they need again. A lot of us tend to, by the wayside, I guess, would find little blocks, stumbling blocks in our lives, whether it be marriage, employment, PTSD. It could be a whole number of situations that we go through. But at the same time, when we go to the VSO, they may be able to help us, but it'd be 2 to 3 weeks in the making. Whereas with McAfee, it's usually the next day, if not that current day, if they're able and if the fund is available. And I've seen a lot of guys in the 2 years I've been there actually get the help that was needed for themselves and their families. And I'm really actually proud of being an alumnus of the program right now. It's been pretty good to me.
Well, thank you for that very nice testimony. Thank you for being here. You mentioned 1975. Was that when you got out of the service?
Yes, sir.
And when did you go in?
71.
Okay, so you are a Vietnam War veteran.
Yes, sir.
Now, thank you for your service.
Thank you very much.
Does the committee have any questions for Mr. Thames? Well, then we'll move on to Elmer Duncan.
Thank you, committee. As I said before, I served from 08 to from 98 to 08. I served in a variety of fields. I was in the humanitarian aid in 2000 to the Balkans. I did the state deployment, Operation Caregiver, when our state workers were on strike for the hospitals. I also was an OIF-2 veteran. I spent a year and a half in that deployment. And through my deployments, I not only did I receive such great skill set, but I also had some hardships that came with those skill sets. After getting out, I became one of the sufferers of the meth addiction that you see spreading across our state. And I've recovered from this. And only through McAfee was I able to recover. I went through two treatment facilities, one during my service time that the ball was dropped because of the slowness with which our services move. Then again later, I was dropped after I had gotten out. Finally, on my third attempt, McAfee, through their resourcefulness, their quick reaction to the situations, their ability to adapt to whatever I needed, was able to place me in a situation where I now works as a ward assistant in the VA, which then the service that they provide then tenfold folds over and helps out other veterans. They've placed me in housing, which will now be able to place me down the road as I suffer from a genetic terminal illness called Huntington's. They will be able to take care of it. My illnesses that have come from my deployments are be taken care of, and they're not, you know, it's not been a service that drops the ball on tracking everything. These other services that are spread out are there and they help, but there's nobody to keep them together, and this program is able to do that. Instead of having one person take care of one issue and another person take care of another and not communicate, this program keeps that adhered together. They're also, the way they're quick about moving stuff is stuff like when I initially started programs, if I saw that I was going to lose employment because I couldn't get there because I didn't have a bus card or didn't have gas in the car, or there was an electrical bill that was going to go out that would lose me all these things that I've developed, they've been quicker to move than any other program throughout the state as to help out. Where some programs might take 2 or 3 weeks to get you helped out, by then you've already lost the job or any foothold that you've developed. With that, that's all I've got.
Well, thank you for your testimony. Is there any questions, Senator Erickson-Ropes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Mr. Thames and Mr. Duncan, for your testimony. I think it's very powerful. It keeps us in touch with the reason that we have these programs. And Mr. Duncan, I just wanted to say it's great news that you've kicked the meth addiction. We get a lot of testimony about that problem in other committees, and it's an exceptionally tough recovery. You look really good, so must mean you're doing well. Mr. Thames, same thing. You look really healthy, and that's a good indicator of a good recovery. I do want to thank you for talking about some of the specialized services that you get through MACV. We heard Ms. Vitalis say that they don't duplicate services. And I think when you're talking about the coordinated care that you got, that is one of the key success points that MACV has, is you take in individuals and you really make sure they're getting from one appointment to the next so they don't get dropped off. And I think that's just a service that really lends itself to the success of the program. So I'm really glad, Senator Vickerman, that you came up with this funding mechanism. I think the rest of the committee knows I'm carrying the MACV bill to try to get some funding for them. And so I appreciate Senator Vickerman and other leadership's work on trying to find a funding stream. This is just really critical.
Thank you very much for supporting our bill, too, as well. It's often hard when we're out there alone to not know what's going on up here on the Hill. So thanks.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions or comments? Senator Vickerman,
I have two. Mr. Chair, if they would like to have the lottery board, the executive directors here, Mr. Harris, so is Mr. McDonald, legal, if they're here, if you had any questions that the committee wanted to ask, otherwise they're here. But just look at what's taking place here. If you think this $1.3 billion deficit is tough, you just wait till it gets to be $4, 5, 6 billion tough. And this is a way that we would have some money that wouldn't cost the state any money that we could bring in. And if you could get up to $1 million, we could really fund some great things with that.
Well, Senator Vickerman, I wonder if for the record, maybe we should have Mr. Harris and Mr. McDonald come up to the table and make a short statement.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Clint Harris. I'm the director of the Minnesota State Lottery. And along with me is Dale McDonald, the attorney, my attorney for the Minnesota State Lottery as well. And it was a powerful presentation that we just heard from these two gentlemen. And, I think the revenue that we could raise, $800,000 to about $1.2 million, per year, and from a veterans game, we'll work hard to make sure that happens.
Mr. Chairman, I have nothing more to add. Okay.
Does the committee have any comments, Senator Engelbretson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one question quickly. Is there going to be an administrative fee to this or not? It says 100% goes to it, so I'm just wondering if there is.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Engelbretson, sorry. I don't know that there would be a fee. I mean, we would just
cost.
A cost, right. No, I mean, it would be the general cost that we spend to develop a scratch game through our vendors. And at some point, we, depending on the game, we may do some PR or some other kinds of support around it to help it to be able to reach the numbers that we're talking about here.
Senator Gimsey, do you have a question?
Senator Gimsey?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question on, based on what you've seen in the past, is $800,000 a realistic number for a game like this?
Yeah, one of the things that we try to do is match up the game style with the price. You know, obviously, for those that you're not aware, we offer $1, $2, $3, $5, $10, and $20 games. And so we would probably use the $5 game because that's a game that's just the right price for a lot of our players. And so we would look to that, you know, being able to get us to this point were the numbers that we're talking about.
Senator Scoey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Harris, a couple questions. First, is this game going to be a replacement for a current game that you have or just an addition to your menu? And then the second question is kind of how is business? I mean, how's business? Are people buying tickets and things going along pretty smoothly? I mean, I know this isn't a bottomless hole, pit. You can't just go forever on this.
Yeah. To the first question, Mr. Chairman, Senator
Scoey.
Thank you. This would not be a new game. This would be a replacement game. We have a certain amount of. We have a certain amount of areas in our dispensers. Thank you. The dispensers has either 12 or 20 slots, and so we generally trying to get all of our retailers to offer 20 games, and so this would be a replacement. It would not be a new game. And to your second question, sales have been doing it. We've set a record in sales the last in fiscal year 09 and in fiscal year 10. Fiscal year 8 and fiscal year 9, we've set records in sales, and the scratch games are the leaders on that. They generate about 60 to 63% of our total sales compared to our lotto games, Powerball, Mega Millions, and those games.
Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if this is going to replace some space in the cabinet, what would it be replacing? And are there other groups' tickets that are going to be no longer available?
Mr. Chair, Madam, I'm sorry, I can't hear this.
Senator Erickson-Ropes,
thank you. We print and sell about 55 scratch games per year. And so we usually have about 20 games available throughout the year as people go and buy tickets. And so we would be simply taking a $5 game that we normally do, a gambling theme or some kind of other theme or a Monopoly theme, we would just switch it to a veterans theme.
Senator Gimsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No. I'm just trying to go back here a little bit, and the constitutional amendment that authorized the lottery, yes. In that constitutional amendment, it said that the money would go into the Environmental Trust Fund. It was pretty much laid out how that money would be used, and the proceeds were supposed to go to certain places,
right,
under that constitutional amendment. Is this going to be constitutional?
Yep. Maybe I can address that.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Gimsey, and that's why we estimated it between $800,000 to $1.2 million. We estimate probably the net profit from a veterans type of game would be between $1 million and $2 million. The Constitution requires 40% of our profits to go to the Environmental Trust Fund, and the other 60% is up to the legislature to decide where to spend the other 60%.
Thank you.
So our estimates fit into that.
Senator Lurie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Harris, so if this is replacing, and I mean, this has to be asked, if this is replacing an existing game, is that the money from that game that would have otherwise been sold is going to create a general fund hole that this is, that we'll have to address somewhere else? Is that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lurie, this would basically replace a game we had, so it would be there would be no new money. It would be the same number we offer. It's just instead of it being a Monopoly game, it would be a veterans game. So that's net, you know, it's not like it's going to be new money.
Set aside.
Senator Hans.
Mr. Chairman, I think Senator Lurie is correct that currently the money from any game is divided between the Environmental Trust Fund and the General Fund. What we're saying in this bill is we're going to take the portion devoted to the General Fund and put it to MACV. So it is going to be taking money from the General Fund to go to this, which would create, I guess, somewhat of a hole.
That's correct.
I don't see anybody else raising their hand, so Senator Vickerman, do you want to make a motion, or what do you want to do?
Mr. Chair, I will move that Senate File 3274 be recommended to pass in council, or where it goes.
State and local government. Now, I'm going to ask if there's anybody in the audience that wants to testify for or against this bill before we vote.
Mr. Chair, just remember what I said earlier. We're desperately trying to find some money to help this part of our veterans' issues. And if the money's going to get tighter and tighter here the next 3-4 years, and I'll speak for, I think I'm right. Sometimes when times get tough, people buy more chances. That's the way it is. When the Great Depression was on, you know what they did? They drank beer. Why in the world did you want to buy beer? Because they just had to do something to help relax themselves a little bit. So, and now and I want to throw something else in. I talk too much, but you know how difficult this is for me, who I don't believe in gambling. Mm-hmm. Bring this bill forward, because I don't look at it as gambling. I look at it as a way to help our veterans who desperately needed help now. Otherwise, I'm not a gambler.
So, Senator Vickerman, there is one gentleman back there that would like to testify. And if there's anybody else in the audience that would like to testify before we vote one way or the other, please come forward.
Mr. Chairman, Senators, my name is Jim Goldgart. I'm the president of the County Veteran Service Officers Association. It's always a pleasure to appear before your committee. Senator Vickerman, thank you very much. Mr. Chair, Senators, the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers, we definitely support what MACV does, and we work with them on a day-to-day basis. But I have to ask that we possibly could be included in this bill as another resource. As you know, there are 87 counties that have county veteran service officers across the entire state, and we bring in over $1.4 billion of federal benefits to the state with dealing with claims with not only at the hospital but also with compensation and pension. We also work with the state in regards to the SSAP grants. Part of our outreach and our transportation programs and our reintegration has been funded by enhancement grants from the Department of Veterans Affairs. We have been notified that we understand that there is a budget crisis, and there could be where we could lose our enhancement grant and therefore would affect how we do our business in regards to getting out in the community, doing the outreach, doing the transportation, taking our veterans to the hospitals, and also working with the National Guard on the reintegration. So we would also like to possibly, we realize and we support this bill, and we think it's a great opportunity for MACV to obtain some money. We also feel that it would be also a great opportunity to get some money out into the frontline troops, those individuals that are dealing with the veterans on a day-to-day basis. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senators.
Could I get your name again, sir?
Jim Goldgart. It's G-O-L-G-A-R-T. And I'm the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers.
Goldgart?
Goldgart, yes, sir. Yes.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Now, looking at the bill here, I see that one half of the appropriation would go to the
commissioner for a grant to the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, MACV, and the other half of the appropriation would be used by the commissioner to contract with Lutheran Social Services. So you're requesting that you get in on part of that split.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that is correct. My understanding, and I've heard and I don't know for fact, is this, that Lutheran Social Services is vying out of this and do not want to be a part of it. I am not correct on it. It's something that I heard earlier today.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
I've been meeting with former Senator Emma Reichshaus. So she knows what we're doing. We're trying to do the social worker through the Lutherans. Sir, I will tell you one thing. This bill will travel along, and I'll look to see if there's some way we can find some part of this to shed, because you're very important.
Thank you, Senator.
That's the first place that they stop is ask.
So. Thank you, Senator.
Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Golgard, thank you for your testimony. I want to remind the committee I've had the opportunity and pleasure to work with Mr. Golgard for the last two interims on a big project. And I just also want to remind Mr. Golgard and the committee that I carried a bill this year that hopefully, if it passes, it's passed through committee so far and is in Senator Scoy's property tax committee, that would give counties the authority to do a special levy for expenses and training for the CVSOs. And I think they currently, by statute, are allowed to levy for those officers serving veterans in our home communities.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Erickson-Ropes, I agree with you, and we have testified in the committee. In talking with that, talking with some of the commissioners around the state, they applaud that would be giving us the opportunity, but it would only for the operation of our office. Any other additional outreach or reintegration, that would not cover that. It would only cover the operation of the office, salaries and supplies for the office.
We have a motion before us, which Senator Vickerman made, and Senator Vickerman, do you have any further comments before we vote?
Well, members, remember what I said earlier. This is a way when we can find 800 to a million or better to desperately search for. That's what we're searching for. I chair the big committee. We have spent every dime that we have. There is no more money. And so when this come up and this idea come up, I thought, well, what a great way to add to it. And it won't cost the state anything. You just go in and buy tickets. I might even do it myself, even if I don't believe in gambling. So.
Well, Senator, I wonder if we could call this on the top of the ticket, the Vickerman Gambling.
So moved.
Well, Senator Vickerman has moved that Senate File 3274 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on State and Local Government. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Same sign, nay. Say nay. The motion's carried.
Thank you,
and I believe
Chair.
That's the end of our business, right? We're done, so the meeting's adjourned.
It's okay.